Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line. We're joining us now, former Houston Astro player, former Houston Astro manager, Art Howe. Art, thanks for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees on this Monday afternoon. Art, I'm curious how much you're watching of this Houston Astro baseball team and how you like this club and how it's built.
You can't help but like this club. I mean, I think now, for the first time in quite a while, they really have put together a solid club, especially in the pitching department. And that's what wins games. They don't have a weak link, and now they've just added McCullers to the rotation. And the way he pitched the other day, it just shows you what he's capable of. So they're really locked in, and as long as they stay healthy down the stretch, they're going to be really tough to beat.
Art, I'm curious because you, and this isn't a loaded question by any means, this is my curiosity because you've had firsthand experience dealing with kind of that first turn of analytics trying to be the dominant end-all, be-all in baseball. As a manager, when you know that at the trade deadline they went out and they got a guy with versatility like Trey Mancini, and you know that he's played outfield in the past, how do you go about, you know, deciphering with a double-digit lead in the division? Like, in my mind, you got to throw that guy out there now to find out what you have, because at the time you didn't know Brantley was going to be out for the year, but you had an inclination. But it just seems like he should be getting more reps in left field.
Well, I think he will eventually. As you said, you know, they went out to trade deadline and picked him up along with Vasquez. I mean, two solid players. And Mancini, as you said, you know, I'm pretty sure they probably had an inkling that Brantley might be possibly done for the year. And that's why they went out and got a player like Mancini. So I think the more and more he gets to play, especially in our ballpark, you know, that short porch in left field looks awfully friendly to him. And he looks like he's pretty much a pull hitter. So it's probably a ballpark that he'd love to hit in. So I think it's a great fit for them. He can play a little first base, give Alvarez a day off from time to time. But, man, they got some nice choices. Sometimes you have too many choices to put out there. You know, Dusty's challenge to keep everybody sharp. But at the same time, it's nice, and a nice luxury to have that kind of depth.
Art, I think we're seeing that. The fact that there are a lot of options, and there's a pocket of the fan base that likes option A, there's a pocket of the fan base that likes option B. It's Art Howe joining us on the HR&P guest line. So everyone is overanalyzing, including us, and micromanaging Dusty's lineups each and every day. What are those conversations like whenever you have a lot of options, whenever you have some good names, and there's going to be a good player on the bench, whenever there's a GM involved? What are those conversations like? What is it like daily having to do that?
Well, I think as a manager, you know, especially when you have basically an everyday player, you call them in when you're going to give them a day off and tell them. And usually what I like to do is give a regular a day off the day before or the day after an off day. That way he has 2 days off to rest and recuperate and get things going again. But it's always important to communicate with the players, you know, let them know what you're thinking and why you're doing it. And if it's sound logic, you know, they'll go along with it. They understand now, I think, that to play every day these days, is very few players play every game in a season. If you get like 90% of the games out of a starter, that's probably what you're looking for. So they all know, I think, when the season starts, they're going to get some days off here and there, and you try to pick it when he really needs it, maybe he's starting to struggle a little bit. Give him a day off. But when they're hot, you hate like heck to give him a day off.
I'm curious, Art, like when you talk about as a veteran manager and you've got a rookie or a young kid, say in the case of Jake Meyers, he's been through some injuries. He looks really tentative in the outfield because, you know, he's hit the wall, and so the warning track seems to be something that he's apprehensive about. And then at the plate, he kind of looks a little lost. And you know he's your center fielder of the future. How do you make the decision between, look, you know that the kid is going to be there in the future for you, but how long do you stick with him as a guy that could be your everyday center fielder in the playoffs, knowing how important it is for this Astros team to try and win another one?
Well, the fact of the matter is they have the luxury of about a 13-game lead. So you can afford to put him out there and let him try to get, you know, work his way through any kind of difficulties he's having. Offensively, I know he's only, I think, hit one home run on the season, something like that. Mm-hmm. But as you said, if he's the future, you can't just throw in the towel. And the fact that they have such a big lead, they can afford to put him out there and let him play because he's pretty darn solid in center field. I don't know if he's really shy now. The fact that he ran into the wall, I think this kid's tough. I think he is going to be a big part of the future for this club. And I think by giving him the confidence, by sending him out there on a regular basis, you're sending a message to him that you believe in him and the organization believes in him. So go out there and play the way you can.
Art Howe, former Astro manager, former Astro player, 100-game winner a few times in his managerial career. Art, you've been to the playoffs a couple times in your managerial career, too. You talked about the Astros pitching rotation, the surplus that they have, especially in the starting rotation, and just got a big boost back on Saturday with Lance McCullers, who was one of the best pitchers in 2021. Can really only start four of those guys in the playoffs. And I know you still have a decent amount of time between now and then, but if you're trying to shape out a playoff rotation right now, how would that go, and what's the decision-making behind it?
Well, first of all, my number one guy in the postseason is Verlander. You give him the ball in the first game of any kind of playoff, and you're in pretty good shape as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, the rest of that rotation is so solid. As you said, they're in a six-man rotation as we speak. So I think as time goes by, they'll start to weed themselves out. The top guys, top four guys, will obviously come to the top and show Dusty, they deserve to be the four guys in the rotation in the postseason. And the other two guys are nice to have, as far as a long man or even, a spot, one inning here or there later in the postseason. If you've got a real quality starter, And he's not able to be in the rotation, that's a nice arm to have if anything goes haywire in the first couple of games.
Art, I'm curious, the loyalty factor as it relates to a guy like Yuli Gurriel, right? He's a little long in the tooth. He's been such a huge part of this run and this epic run in history of Astros baseball. He's beloved by his teammates and by Dusty. But at a certain point, they've been kind of patiently waiting all year long. Not that he has to try and win another batting title, but that he's truly not what we've seen of him. And as you get closer to the playoffs, too, as we talk about the experimental process, at a certain point, with the loyalty being a factor, it seems, with Dusty, when do you start saying, for my best chance to win in the playoffs, no matter what happens with the rest of the regular season, there may come a day where I might have to contemplate Yuli not starting in the playoffs so that a guy that's a better stick can be in the lineup?
Well, that's what you're getting paid to do as a manager. You have to make those real tough decisions. But I'm a Yuli Gurriel guy. I'll tell you, I love his swing. He keeps the bat through the zone a long time, and that's why he won the batting title last year. And I know he's gotten off to a real slow start, but I think he's starting to show some signs of his old self. And, it's really hard for me as a manager to throw in the towel on a guy that won the batting title just a year ago. I think there's something still left in the tank, and that's my opinion. Of course, I'm not running the team, but I think you got to keep him in the lineup some way because he played the solid defense at first also.
Sure.
It's Art Howe, former Astro manager, Astro player, joining us on the HR&P guest line. Also manager of the A's during the whole Moneyball thing. And Art, I know that you were inaccurately portrayed in that movie and made out in a negative light that, that didn't exist. But what are those conversations like? Because the Astros have an old school manager, a modern analytical general manager, kind of how it was in Oakland. What are the conversations like between general manager and manager when it comes to the roster, when it comes to the lineup, when it comes to the pitching staff? Can you shed some light on that?
Well, I think you have to be flexible as a manager. You know, you understand the new analytics, and that plays a big part in, like, setting up your defense, how you're going to, you know, all the shifts you see now. That's based on all the information they get from Major League Baseball, basically. I used to get sheets on exactly where hitters hit the ball. So wherever they predominantly hit the ball, now they're using the shift. And the fact of the matter is, a lot of these hitters, even though they're being shifted, they don't even try to beat the shift. So you might as well go with it as a manager. But the one thing I question a little bit about the analytics is you kind of take the player's heart out of it. There's a lot of players who have a lot of heart. And just because analytics say one thing, it's pretty hard to eliminate what the kid's made of. And I kind of tend to lean towards somebody's makeup more than maybe something numbers-wise. You know, they go by numbers almost totally now, but I like them to know what a guy's made of.
I think it's just like in basketball, Art, where you can say that the analytics give you, you know, information we didn't have in the past, but that eye test means something too. And it's not just, you know, what you see in terms of, like, from your expertise, a hitter coming around. It's the intangibles that don't, that numbers don't factor in terms of the chemistry with teammates or, you know, the different things that they bring to the table. The thing that's curious to me is how many analytical teams get upset if they shift on you and a guy tries to bunt, but you're giving up the whole third baseline. It's like, that's part of the game too. I'm surprised more guys don't do that simply because that's an opportunity. Like you said, a guy with heart that's a smart baseball player says, I know they're expecting me to be a power hitter, but if they're going to let me just slap it down the line and an easy base hit, I should take that too.
Yeah, especially in a close ball game, you know, late in the game, and you're leading off an inning, you're two runs down, let's say, and they're giving you a whole left side of the infield. You know, at least take one shot at it, you know, push the ball that way or whatever. But like I said, you don't see anybody doing that. They're thinking about hitting the ball out of the ballpark a little too much as far as I'm concerned. That uppercut swing, it's ingrained in everybody in baseball now, it looks like. And that's why you see the strikeouts going way up. You know, the upper part of the strike zone is really hard to handle if you have an uppercut type stroke. And you don't see, that's why I like Gurriel. He can hit that ball up there. He's got that level swing. And that's what Brantley had, too, before he got hurt. He had that good level swing. He could hit the ball to all fields. So those type of hitters, you know, that's why they are very, very good at what they do. And I'd like to see more hitters start to go the other way a little bit more often, especially when the game dictates you getting on base and setting the stage for the next guy.
Art, they're getting rid of the shift next year. You a fan of that or no?
What's that?
They're getting rid of the shift next year. Now you have to have two infielders on each side of the bag at second. Is that a good rule or a bad rule?
I would love to see it.
Very good.
But I don't know if we'll live to see it.
Oh, I hope that you live to see it, Art. It's in the next few months. We expect you to. And we can tell that you still keep up with the Astros a whole lot. So thanks for spending a few minutes with us. Tremendous insight as always, and hope to catch up again soon.
Thanks, guys. Nice talking to you, and have a great day.
Likewise. Art Helm, man, that's a heck of a guy, right?
It is
there.
A heck
salt
of a guy.
The earth.
You know, and I've heard it from multiple sources, too, that, you know, he was just so falsely portrayed in that movie. Yeah. And that's a shame because it's like the Jerry West in the Laker documentary. No matter what you know really happened, and you know what the true story is, the way it's portrayed, everybody believes what they see, and that's unfortunate.
I played a round of golf with Art Howe once. He wouldn't have known me for Adam, though. And I'm sure it was probably like the worst round of golf he's ever had because he had to, you know, sit with me. But great dude. It was awesome. One of the best rounds I've had.
I wish
just picking his brain.
More time with him. There were so many other things I wanted to ask him about in terms of, you know, the retirement ceremony with Poole and Tal Smith and some other things that we'd kicked around.
Well, it sounded like he liked us.
Great insight, yeah.
I think he'd come back and join the Killer Bees. Yuli Gurriel, though, he said he's a Yuli guy. He would keep him in the lineup. Would we? And is there a way to do that? It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, it's cool to have Art Howe on, former Houston Astro manager, player. You know what Art Howe has in common with Chris Woodward? They are both former managers of Major League Baseball. Chris Woodward, the Texas Ranger manager as of this morning, he's not the Texas Ranger manager anymore. He's been sacked.
Very sad that you don't let the rest of the season, what's left of it, play out before you make a move like that.
They should never let go of Jeff Banister.
I mean, just get through the rest of the regular season. It's not like college basketball or college football where you're trying to get a head start on all the coaching opportunities out there or the candidates by saying, hey, we're the first one to have an opening. We want to talk to you.
Yeah.
I mean,
it could be part of that.
I mean, but you still got a month left in the season. You could play it out. No one's going to be hiring their new manager till the offseason anyway. It just, to me, it just seems a little bit odd, like there might be something about clubhouse or something else that might be tied into it.
Just, you know, we were supposed to be way better than this, and here's where we are.
Why? Because you spent all that ungodly amounts of money on two shortstops and had one play second base?
Well, you know that whoever spent that money thinks so.
Mm-hmm.
You know whoever spent it thinks so. But
that's
here,
true.
Chris Woodward thought he was all cheeky and cute the other day when he called out Bregman, calling out the pitch location. He had the intentional balk and thought that he was next level, outside of the box thinking. He got sacked today on August 15th.
He's not outside of the box. He's outside of the league.
He's outside of the league. 51-63
for
the Arlington Rangers. No longer the manager there. Interesting what Art Howe had to say. He didn't want to answer that Moneyball question. We tried to get it out of him with he and Billy Bean. And, of course, I think he was thinking about a defamation lawsuit against Moneyball once upon a time. Never came out. But basically, look, I think Art Howe was negatively portrayed in that movie. But there was a dynamic of the old school. And look, we heard it from Art Howe there. He sounded like an old school manager, let's be honest. So there was the dynamic of old school manager meet new school modern analytical GM. And they didn't always see eye to eye. They always didn't have the same philosophy. And I think Art Howe's probably more Dusty Baker than he is James Click, if you look at the Astros. And he was defending Yuli Gurriel.
Yeah, he was a staunch supporter of Yuli Gurriel and his swing and believing him and keep throwing him out there and playing him. And I was curious, too, how that related to a guy like Jake Meyers because of the fact that, you know, we've highlighted Van Gundy and others come to mind about guys that just refuse to play rookies. They won't play the rookies and the young guys when they have a championship caliber team because they believe that there's just too much that could go wrong that you can't trust them for. But, you know, as it relates to the fact that these guys are going to be your long-term right now center fielder and shortstop, that's why you don't mess with them as much. But it was interesting to get his perspective. He was great with the candor he gave us in his answers because as it relates to the everyday thinking of the manager, I mean, and I don't know how much Billy Bean tinkered with the lineup every day.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate the movie is.
Yeah, but I think that when you know as a manager, you've got really good players that are sitting out as opposed to, you know, and are better than the options that you currently have on the roster, it's hard to look past them. That's why I get so frustrated with Dusty. I understand your loyalties. I understand you want to, you know, you want to commend and reward the guys that did everything to get you there. But at a certain point, when your ultimate goal is to win the World Series and you acquired one or two players that are better than what you had currently, how can you not throw them out there? Especially then with one of the guys you were counting on out for the year. And he said exactly what I've been preaching all along, which is when you've got a double-digit lead in the division, you should be trying out all the, not just when I was talking about center field, and he said, keep throwing Jake out there so we can get through this.
Yeah.
That's where Chaz has got to get starts.
See, I'm good with Jake Meyers starting in center field most days, especially against righties. Against lefties, that's
McCormick's
Chaz's
be
job.
Out. Yes.
Against lefties, Chaz should be your center fielder every single time. Now, against righties, I'm fine letting Jake Meyers have the runway because if he does snap out of it and if he gets to 2021 Jake Meyers level, he's your best center fielder. So give him the runway because you have this division lead. Give him the time to figure it out. And then if he doesn't, you got a couple of options that you could go there. More than likely, Chaz McCormick is your center fielder. Yuli Gurriel, it's just about, is he washed? Like, the question for Yuli Gurriel isn't, like, does he need more time to figure it out? Does he need more time to come off an injury? The question we have about Yuli Gurriel, is he washed up? Is he a shell of the player that he was as recently as last year? And people will say, well, he's been better as of late. He had a stretch of about 30 games where he was better, where he was hitting close to 300. But if you go look at his last 28 days, which probably amounts to like 25 games or so, actually 20 games when you throw in all the days off and all that, his average and like his numbers over those last 20 games are pretty similar to his 2022 totals. Like his average 259 versus 243, slightly better. His on-base is almost exactly the same, and his slugging percentages actually went down compared to his season total. So, like, I believe this is who Yuli Gurriel is. He is what the numbers tell you that he is in 2022. So the question for me is Yuli Gurriel versus Trey Mancini, and there's other ways to keep Yuli in the lineup, but let's start there. If the question is Yuli versus Mancini, to me, it's a no-brainer.
You just have to go with the team that gives you the best chance to win if the difference in defense isn't that drastic. Sure, you can say, well, by a long, large margin, he leads all first basemen in scoops. But you know what? Depending on how many scoops you get, most first basemen can scoop. He just has made the most of every single opportunity he's got. But when you say it's not that large of a margin in terms of the defense, when it comes to the offense, if it's that large of a margin and Mancini gives you that big of an advantage offensively when he's in the lineup, in the playoffs when everything is on the line, you cannot turn the other cheek and ignore that. You have to go with the guy that gives you the chance to fortify your lineup the most, score the most runs. And obviously, the team that scores the most runs wins. So, especially if you're going to keep throwing Jake out there against righties, you have to have the rest of the lineup ready to go, lock, stock, and barrel, and they have to be really, really solid. And Trey Mancini's got to be in there.
And, like, I get that Yuli's great at picking the baseball. Some of his other defensive metrics aren't great, but if you want to ignore that and say he's a better defensive player, I'll accept that. Bring him in as late in games. Bring him in when you're up two runs in the seventh. Let him finish games. Let him be that defensive sub off the bench. That said, there's a way to get both of them in the lineup. We saw Trey Mancini in left field on Saturday. I thought he looked fine in left field. He caught the fly balls was supposed to catch. He wasn't tripping and stumbling on himself like Dusty Baker would make you believe.
Well, he maneuvered that little that little part of the wall that
foul
comes
territory.
Out in the first play of the game.
Foul territory, right? Yeah. He came in, made it look easy. Like, he's not a burner. He's not going to have incredible range, but he's going to make the plays that he's supposed to make, and I thought he handled himself well. Look, Mancini's your everyday left fielder. We know that Michael Brantley's done for the year. The idea of Brantley, you getting Brantley back, does not exist. So there is a plausible lineup day in, day out. That Saturday's lineup I loved. You had a lefty on the mound. You had Chaz in center. You had Trey in left. You had Yuli at first base. So, like, you can play both. The question doesn't have to be Mancini versus Yuli unless Dusty Baker's being stubborn. I thought his lineup Saturday and Sunday were exactly what I wanted. And the Astros offense performed Saturday and Sunday as well. Like, small sample, I get that. It's not, you know, conclusive to what they will be all the time. But there is a way to play both of those guys. It just requires Mancini playing the outfield.
No question. And again, because you need to, you have this massive window of opportunity to just experiment and try because you're so far up in the division. And right now you're two games up in the best record in the American League. So the fact that the opportunities are presenting themselves for you to just know what you need to know. Know who's going to play center field. Know who's going to start most games and if you're going to platoon. Know if Mancini can play left field or not. Mm-hmm. Know all the things that you need to know ahead of time so that when you go into the playoffs, you know the best lineup that you put up. Because I'm with you. You know that. And I was all over it on Twitter and people were all over me like that, you know, because of the fact that they knew I had so much love for the opportunity to get Mancini in there every day. The fact that the first day, like, I was almost to the point of no return in terms of my joy to find Mancini in left, Chaz in center, and then they all did their job. They did it both offensively and defensively. Like, this is what I was talking about. So what does he do the next day? Well, he doesn't put Chaz in center, and he doesn't put Mancini in left, but at least they were still in the lineup because you got to have those bats.
0830, if Jordan can effectively play left field, so can Mancini. I think Jordan's a better defensive outfielder, but I get your point. Somebody also DM me on Twitter saying that the Rangers are looking at Joe Espada.
No, I had heard that previously, and a lot of people were saying, you know, even Not Santa on Twitter was like, well, you better be careful and wrap up Joe now because Joe could be going to Arlington. And we had talked about that a week or so ago as a potential landing spot for him. But, you know, the Rangers want to be the Astros, and you know that they watch everything that they do, and it would make pretty common sense for them to go, if I want the best guy that I can possibly get for this young team, it's Joe Espada.
Yeah, I think Joe Espada will allow the Astros to match, though. You know what I mean? Like, if the
I think there was a conversation, like we talked about. I believe that there was, when all of a sudden he pulled his name out of the hat for all those jobs, I believe there was a conversation had that said, it's your job in waiting depending on what Dusty does or we do with Dusty.
Yeah. I think Joe Espada will be a manager next year. If the Astros want him to be their manager, he will be their manager. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Mailbag Monday coming up at 2 o'clock. So ask us anything Monday. Anything you want to ask us, we'll be answering your mailbag questions at 2 o'clock, 713-780-ESPN, if you want to get those in. Also, you can just tweet them at us at ESPN975. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. And we're always at twitch.tv/ESPN975. I have a question for you guys when we come back. Is it okay to hard pivot the group chat in the middle of a conversation? Tell you what we mean and if it's acceptable. Next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right. You belong to any group chats, Blankers?
The one that I have to do with you guys.
Have to do with us.
Yeah.
No one's forcing you to respond to anything in that chat.
I got a couple. Couple with buddies and
Sean Resper,
former co-workers. No, I don't need a group chat with Resp. It's just I see him every Saturday and we talk about, you know, we'll text or chat during the week.
Do you have a group chat for your basketball?
Oh, I do
game?
Have a group chat for basketball.
That's what I meant. Yes, yeah. That's right. I figured you would have.
Yep, for the Saturday morning group. Yep.
Brendan strikes me as a group chat guy.
Oh my gosh. Sure.
I think I have like 6 or 7 highly active group chats.
So are they all on text or do you have like group me?
WhatsApp and then some on text.
WhatsApp.
It's just a different group me.
I know what it is. I have a fair share of group
chats. You know what's shocking? I don't have GroupMe or WhatsApp. I just use the text.
That's not shocking at all.
I know. That's why I set that up for you.
I counted in my head. I think I have 5 active. And when I say active, I mean at least a message a day group chats.
I have one very active group chat. And then we have like a few of them that spawn from that one that are all like the same people, but it's like different group chat names. So I have a fair amount of group chats. I talk in these group chats quite a bit. So you have group chat like do's and don'ts, right? Like there's certain things that are okay, there's certain things that are not okay. Group me, you're allowed to boot people from whenever they're acting out, which is something that we love to do on this show. So is it okay to hard pivot the group chat in the middle of like a serious conversation? Like not even serious. But if they're going on and on about Little League World Series, this is something I imagine Blankers talks about to his group chat.
Yeah.
So if like you're having a good conversation, 3 or 4 people, it's just, you know, chat, whatever, about Pearland Little League. Is it okay for somebody else to just throw in like a random story?
No, it's not.
Just a hard pivot the group chat in the middle of a conversation.
Different. A random story, maybe, but probably not. But it's possible. But a complete subject change. And like just coming in, Budinski, and trying to just completely shift the conversation, I'd have a problem with that. If there's good convo going on a topic and people are participating and it's multiple people sharing comments and all of a sudden you come in, guns blazing, and just decide to, you know, you're bigger and better than the rest of us to change the subject, I got a problem with that.
Go ahead.
I was having a passionate debate last week with a group chat of I think 5 people about whether or not Matthew Stafford's number should be retired. Because their rookie is going to be wearing number 9.
Oh, that's right.
And all of a sudden, somebody shares the Oakland basketball schedule. And he started it with not to change the subject.
Oakland basketball. So you're talking college.
Yes. Okay. This is actually a group. So I don't know if this makes it a little bit different. But this group chat started as a people who care about Oakland basketball chat. But like we're in an intense debate. It's going back and forth. I'm super into it. And that comes, and I was ready to fist fight this dude.
I was so
upset because I was like, I was enjoying the discussion. It was a really good, fun debate, and he just absolutely murdered it with the Oakland basketball schedule.
Yeah, with your violent nature and your protectiveness, too, I could see you ready to just throw down with somebody, but I would be irritated by that. Like, if we're having a conversation, like even in, like say, for example, if it was more like a station-wide chat or something like that, and the three of us are having a passionate conversation about dessert or about, you know, whatever, fantasy football, and someone decides to chime in and say, hey, I'm really pissed off about the air conditioning. Well, time out. That's not what we're talking about here. And at a certain time when there's a lull in the conversation or you think it's, you know, that we've exhausted it, you feel free to say, hey, if you guys are done with that, have you guys noticed that the air conditioning's out? As opposed to like mid-passionate or constructively good discussion, you get in the middle of it. Like, who are you?
We call that spamming the chat. whenever somebody has this, like, different, you know, whatever they want to talk about, why there's a, you know, ongoing conversation about something that everybody's talking about, it's called spamming the chat. Stop spamming the chat while the big boys are talking, well, while the adults are talking.
I don't even care if you want to go off, and this happens in one of my group chats. People will go off and send 7 or 8 straight messages on something nobody else cares about. It's just their place to like, let that out. I don't even care.
Right.
You can do that, but just don't interrupt a good conversation.
Absolutely.
A rule of thumb that I have, like, if I'm not engaged in a conversation that other people are having, that's good, that it's a good engagement, I'll usually wait minimum of 5 minutes before changing it. Like, I was, okay, if this isn't going on for 5 minutes, the conversation's paused for 5 minutes. All right, this is whenever
right.
I'll
That's
add
that lull
something
of the conversation.
My rule's like 20.
Your rule's 20?
Like 20 minutes.
Is 5 too short?
For me it is, but I think it's a group chat by group chat rule.
Yeah, I feel like 5's plenty. Like, it's a slow in the conversation. It's a lull in the conversation.
I think maybe the reason mine is 20 is, like, a lot of times my group chat will pop off all day long. And so I don't want to interrupt somebody who just, like, got busy at work for a minute.
Yeah.
They still may pop back in 5 minutes.
Yeah, maybe 5 minutes is too short. Maybe I'm going to reexamine that. Maybe I'll go 15. I feel like 20 is too long.
I think the ultimate taboo, too, is if someone does that and then they do it and they turn it political. Or they turn it where you know you're going to offend somebody one way or the other.
Eh,
and it
my can, chat's
and the
political.
Whole chat does
yeah.
it.
Oh, I'm yeah. Okay.
See,
I'm
that's
okay
the one
that.
Thing we stay away from. It's like, you know what? Everybody's entitled to their own opinions and everybody has their own stances. So in the past, it's like I've literally seen politics be the reason that guys that have been friends for like 25, 30 years, like completely disown each other and don't want to talk to them anymore. It's like,
well, I would question their friendship to begin with then.
It's just, it's not, I understand that everybody's passionate, but it's not that serious to blow up a 25, 30 year friendship.
See, that's the only place I'll talk politics is in that group chat.
Really?
Completely honest. I have a pretty hard stance of not talking politics. That's the one exception.
Huh.
And like my wife and like family, stuff like that. But like, That's the only place I'll talk politics. 713-780-ESPN. What are the group chat rules that you have? 713-780-3776. Klops is saying, I have a group chat with my wife's entire family, 10-plus people, 4 different combos mixed within one another. I'm completely silenced in that group. That's a lot.
Like, it's tough when you're, like, when you're in the middle of a deep discussion and you're waiting for guys to respond based on something you threw out there, and all of a sudden you got to decipher because there's 2 other conversations going on, and they're talking about, like, you know, milk with cookies as opposed to like ice water, and I'm like, no, I'm looking for the answers to the last point I made in a conversation we've been having for 15 minutes.
Yeah, see, here's another interesting question. We'll ask you 713-780-ESPN. What are your group chat rules? Should I be concerned about this one? Like, my parents are divorced. My mom's side, that side of the family, they've added my wife to their family group chat. My dad's side, they've added my wife to that family's group chat. I'm not in my wife's family's group chat. Should I be offended by that?
Yeah. Yep.
Should I be offended?
Yeah.
What are they trying to tell me?
Well, they're trying to tell you that there are things they don't want you to know.
I think so. I'm offended. Yep. I'm officially offended at this very moment.
I don't know if this is a little bit weird, but the group chat that I was actually telling my story about, as you guys could probably guess, not a ton of people care about Oakland College basketball. That group chat is actually
don't
a
they
friend.
Just call them the Warriors?
No, they're not that good.
College.
Oh, right.
In Michigan.
Right, yes.
But that group chat is actually just a college friend and mostly his family. It was actually his dad who changed the conversation the other day.
Oh, so there's a big boy.
I was
in this
so
chat.
Upset at this like 60-year-old man for changing
did you go
the
at
topic.
Him?
No, I just
so
dropped
this is the guy you wanted to punch?
I did, but I dropped it.
You wanted to punch a friend's dad?
Yes.
Your primary group chat.
Oh, it's not my primary group chat.
Oh, okay. I was about it's to just, say, your primary group chat has a 60-year-old man in it.
No, it's the only group chat that cares about Oakland basketball. It's a very select group of people who do that.
Huh.
See, now that's a different dynamic all in itself because you feel like you're all on the same equal level in a group chat when it's your buddies. But if one of them's your buddy's dad.
No.
I think you got to hold back. I don't think you can have the same Ooh. Kind of lenience, just the flippid responses that you would have with your boys.
Man, I don't know. I guess it's a different group
Hey, Ted's
chat.
Dad, shut up, you dumbass. We were talking about this,
That's
not that.
That's not who I am, though. Like, I would just hold back on any of my friends.
TNT said no
I
double.
I just complained to you guys about it.
Yeah. Yeah, 60-year-old dad. Hey. okay. TNT, no double texting. Get your thought across in one message. I don't know about that one. I disagree with that one.
Yeah, no.
Like, if you're writing a paragraph in a group chat, something's wrong with you. I'd rather see 4 different texts than all 4 of those texts in one paragraph. I feel like that's more of a red flag. Cougar Blaze on Twitch. Old people in group chats do not go well together. That's very good. Mega Blast. See, these are like my friends.
That's why I banned Barry Warner.
Yeah. I can't imagine that going well.
Oh.
Chirp, chirp. Mega Blast on Twitch says, me and my friends can have knockout, drag out arguments about anything, including politics, and still be friends and go break bread or have a drink 10 seconds later. That's the way I am with my friends in my group chat. We could say literally anything to each other, and then the very next second, we'd be willing to fight for that person.
I mean, that's the loyalty. I think that's the beauty about it in terms of the loyalties and, that go with it. I think you know going in that you're not going to be hyper-analyzed by everything that you say, as opposed to, like, when we put it out there and we're in Twitch or something like that. I mean, you don't know the people like you do know your good friends, and so you never know who you're dealing with and what might offend somebody. But if you know your friends and you've known them for a long time, you know that there are things you can say to them they're going to say to you, and you don't take it like fighting words like Brendan said. You just talk it like, oh, you're coming at me like that? Okay, well, I got this for you. And then it actually makes it more entertaining for the people that maybe not primary conversation people in that certain topic.
People are saying, what is a primary group chat? Everybody knows what a primary group chat is. It's your go-to group chat. It's the one that you prioritize over all the other. It's your primary, not yep. your secondary. Adam says, can we see a picture of this angry producer, please? Trying to put a face to a name here. Adam Dunn.
You're saying he looks like Adam Dunn?
No. I'm telling Adam, the guy who texted yes. us or tweeted us, that my job here is done, that I did put a picture to the name. Not the new
Can we get congratulations, by native. The way, because it's such a pressing topic to you, Jeremy.
What's that?
The Little League World Series of softball for girls, and the winner is the Southwest out of Hewitt, Texas. They've won again. Texas wins the Little League Softball World Series.
They did?
Yes.
Fantastic. I'm happy
they
for them.
They beat Maryland.
Yeah. I was wondering why you're distracted.
Where is Hewitt, Texas?
It's south of Waco. Chip and Joanna Gaines built the city. It was
is that
a,
true?
Yeah.
Huh.
No
so,
idea if it's
so,
true.
So it's a... Oh, so you don't know.
No, I just made that up right there on the fly. 713-780-ESPN. What are the rules of your group chat? Would anyone care if they made the preseason games just three quarters? You just get rid of the fourth quarter. Would anyone care? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Doc Linville's office. Look, if you don't know what the NeoGraft procedure is, but you've been dealing with hair loss and a lack of coverage on your scalp with your hair, and you think the only option is to shave it all off or to use those sprays and creams and foams that just mask the problem but don't solve it or fix it, you need to check out the NeoGraft procedure, because Doc Linville is, in my opinion, the best at doing it. He's here locally, and essentially what it's doing is taking hair where you have a lot of it, you're never going to lose it, and genetically, the doctors say, you're never going to lose it on the sides and in the back. And if you can take some of that hair and relocate it to where you're either lacking completely or you're getting thin, it can absolutely be a game changer. And for you as ESPN listeners, you can check out the NeoGraft procedure and get all the information for free. It normally costs $150 for a consultation, but as an ESPN listener to The Hive, you get that consultation for free. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com and set up the appointment with Doc Linville and his staff. You're going to love it, because you can go in and ask all the questions. You're not on the hook for anything. Find out how long it takes to see the full results. Find out the success rate, which is, by the way, spoiler alert, 95%+ success rate of every follicle moved. I couldn't be happier. I'm almost a year in, and I'm telling you right now, the fact that I got my old hairline back, the fact that I've seen this hair grow and get thicker and stronger and look better every single day, and it's not just me. Granado sees it. He's like, oh, my God, dude, it looks fantastic. My wife and my friends go, man, that procedure worked. That's what really is the one that pushed me over the top. The fact that you see it every day and you know it's working and it's not going anywhere. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. It's Doc Linville, 975hair.com.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
1296 is asking, who is in Dusty's group chat? Hank Aaron was.
Ralph Garr.
Ralph Garr is a big Dusty
sure.
fan.
Yep.
Dusty's big fan of Ralph Garr. Who else does he talk about? He talks about Hendrix a lot. But I don't know if he was really friends with Hendrix more than just kind
I think
of
he
like
just added Willie
idolizing
Tavares.
Him. Really?
Yeah,
they were boys?
He was talking about.
He would have loved Willie Tavares.
When Willie Tavares was on the field, he couldn't stop just raving about what a great dude he is.
Did he not manage Willie Tavares?
I think they crossed paths for at least like a season or a short period of time. But the Blummer and the guys were talking about how Dusty was raving about Willie Tavares.
Because I think, didn't they cross paths in Cincinnati?
And then they showed him and Cheo and Cesar Cedeno on the field this weekend, and they were just yucking it up.
So Cheo's probably in his group chat.
So I would say Cheo and Cesar Cedeno are probably in there.
Enes Cabell, I would imagine, is in Dusty's group chat. You know who's not in Dusty's group chat?
Tony La Russa.
Tony La Russa. James Click.
Probably not.
Probably not James Click.
What about Steve Garvey?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
If you look at those Dodger teams.
Do you think Barry Bonds is in Dusty's group chat?
Absolutely.
I had a dude trying to argue with me yesterday saying that Dusty Baker was more responsible in his first year of manager as the 1993 Giants than Barry Bonds was, who won the MVP that year. I stopped talking to him at that point.
Please do.
Why do you think he won the MVP?
That's where you change the subject and make it a group chat.
It was,
because there's no way you could get through it otherwise.
Yeah, he managed Willie Tavares.
There you go. Yeah.
Dusty Baker in 2009 with Cincinnati managed Tavares in his only year at Cincinnati. So that makes sense.
Yeah, look, I think that it's probably like old Dodgers from back in the day, too, that he played with, too.
Yeah. But,
and he always says Ralph Garza's his best friend. So.
Yeah. Were you asking, Brendan?
Oh, I said, well, how do you think Barry Bonds won that MVP? Because of Dusty Baker.
Dusty pigeonholing him in the three hole. 0613, my group chat rules. Don't put me in a group chat or I'll wholeheartedly troll spam it. 0613 sounds wonderful. 5038, y'all think Hinch could be a possibility for the South Oklahoma Rangers? We'll answer that at 2 o'clock. We'll do that at 2 o'clock, Eric the Driver. It is our Monday mailbag at 2 o'clock. You want to get in some questions there, we'll allow you to do so. 713-780-3776 for our mailbag Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, as it regards to Hinch, though, too, I mean, he's got a job. Unless there's like a Dusty versus the front office type situation that we don't know about. You knew this team, and look, Brendan, as the resident
Detroit fan, they don't have a front office anymore. They fired it.
But I'm saying that
I don't think he's going anywhere.
They knew when they signed him that he didn't sign up to make them instant competitors for a playoff spot, and I don't think that there's anything that says he had a fireable offense with, you know, falling asleep in the dugout or refusing to play guys they traded for. So I think he should be fine.
Is that a fireable offense?
Yeah. You're damn right it is.
Is that okay to take a little
siesta in
the
dugout? I'm pretty sure
coffee's
free everywhere, including in the clubhouse. If you're feeling a little sleepy, whether you get yourself a Red Bull or a extra strong coffee, you shouldn't be falling asleep in the middle of your main priority as a manager.
Let's keep in mind that La Russa grew up on greenies and amphetamines. So, I'm just
and wine,
saying,
and a lot of wine.
I'm just saying, they got rid of that stuff. If that stuff was still around, Tony La Russa would still be a, you know, 100-win manager each and every year.
He also grew up drinking and driving without an Uber when he got drilled for that.
Yeah, didn't he say, do you know who I am?
Yeah, right after he got the White
Tony
Sox
La Russa.
Job. Yeah.
8875, a member of my primary group chat is a Patriot fan. To make it even worse, he's a Dodger fan. Growing up and in college, he was all about the Astros and Cowboys. I have dudes like that in my group chat, too.
Is that not the ultimate Fairweather fan, like front runner?
I have a couple of T-shirt fans in my group chat.
But in multiple sports?
Yeah. Like, yeah, they'll be like a Cowboy fan, a Patriot fan, a Dodger fan, a Heat fan. It's ridiculous.
Oh, my God. That'd be annoying.
Yeah.
So annoying. I get it if it's just one team and there's a reason, a random reason why you're attached to that team. But if you go Patriots-Dodgers?
Brutal.
The only thing worse would be like Patriots-Yankees.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, 5535, Miles Straw is in Dusty's group chat.
Yeah, he is. He's not in James Click's.
Who else is in Dusty's group chat? 713-780-ESPN.
He can't get enough of him.
Which one, the lefty?
Yeah.
The loogie?
Yeah.
He's using him often.
He loves him some Will Smith. Oh, I know who it is. Daily Raley. Daily Raley is in Dusty's group chat.
I miss
for
that
sure.
guy.
I know you do.
I miss that guy. Not so much him particularly. I just like mentioning him on our show. It's something that we've been missing as a show.
I know why, in part. You do.
Yeah. I love that guy. Anyways, would anybody really be upset if a preseason game was only three quarters? Just get rid of the fourth quarter. Like, I didn't want to see that fourth quarter for the Texans. I saw enough of Jeff Driskel. Would anyone actually care if you got rid of the fourth quarter of a preseason football game?
I would hope not. I mean, I just think that I couldn't even stomach most of the third quarter. I mean, when you look at it, and especially because you know teams now are even more so than ever before trying to avoid the injuries to their key players, and the fact that you thought you were doing a favor by reducing a game by maybe picking up the intensity in the three that you do play. But it seems like it's gone the other way and that teams are like, I'm not throwing out some of my primary players or any of my really good players for any more than a series or two here or there. And I think that whole the third week of the preseason is always where you play your starters at least a half. Mm-hmm. I think that's out the window now, too.
Look, no one really wants to play their players, period. Like, most teams aren't even playing their players in the preseason. If they do, they're playing them, like, one series. Mm-hmm. I think at the most, you're probably going to see, like, the most a team, I think, will play its starters maybe a half, maybe three quarters, but no way a fourth.
See, I think, unless it's a conditioning issue, I think a half is probably where I would cap it. Simply because of the fact that, first of all, as a coach, you better be preaching the fact, this is why we're practicing hard. This is why when the ones go against the ones in practice, you guys got to step it up. If you don't want to play against a team in another uniform with the potential for getting hurt, then we've got to up our game and practice a little bit so that we know what the parameters of not hitting the quarterback or not taking out a skill position guy, but competing from a timing and a speed perspective to get you ready for the regular season.
Phillip says, I don't miss the first three quarters, but maybe that means he misses the fourth. So just get rid of the fourth quarter.
Jeremy, you know there's an off button, right?
What are you talking about?
Like, if you don't want to watch the fourth
quarter.
No,
you got to look, I think that you have to watch every snap.
Oh, I
got to watch every snap.
You do not have to
watch the fourth quarter. How else are you going to love what you saw from camp? How is she going to love what you saw from Jalen Camp?
How else can you, like, go overboard on the punter?
Jeremy.
Cam Johnson's a different breed.
Who had the best fourth quarter for the Texans?
Cam Johnson.
Jeff Driscoll. He led the game-winning drive. He also threw a pick with 5 minutes
left. He
actually
did. What, he had 2 minutes on the clock and got him a touchdown?
Yeah, Jeff Driscoll. All he does is throw picks and lead game-winning drives.
Just turn it off in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, you got to watch the whole thing. 0830, do away the quarters in preseason games and just make it two halves.
I don't know what the hell that's all.
It's a yogiism is what that is.
Exactly.
I went to a pizza joint. I didn't want six pieces, so I asked them to cut it into fours. That's what that is. Yeah, that's the same thing, 0830.
Make them shorter. Do like 2 15-minute halves.
Make it a running clock. Alex is saying, yes, Las Vegas would care if it went to three quarters for a preseason game. Alex, Las Vegas would compensate for that. They would adjust the spread. They would adjust the totals.
Brendan, how would this affect your preseason fantasy numbers?
None. It wouldn't affect
them
at all.
Are you kidding me? It would be a huge problem.
No, it wouldn't because it's the same across the board.
No,
it would
be a huge problem. I need that extra playing time for the guys at the bottom of the roster.
But you would adjust who's going to get the brunt of the playing time.
I don't want to have to adjust.
How do you know how his league is set up? You don't know that.
I know what league he's playing in. I know how daily fantasy sports works.
Okay, I know how daily fantasy sports works, but not
I'm
some
not
of the,
sure
some
that
the,
you do.
Not daily fantasy football the way he plays it.
No.
That's
he,
too
he
much
plays
work.
The DK and the FD.
Put like $20 on Saturday, by the way.
Listen to that. Big roller over there. No one would care if you eliminated a quarter of preseason football.
No one would care.
The coaches would be happy. You wouldn't have to live through
the trainers would be
cut.
Happy.
The fans would be happy. They're leaving anyways.
Would you charge less for preseason games?
They wouldn't. They're
greedy.
See,
yeah, the owners, that's one thing they're never going to do.
I mean, I don't know how you can offer less of a product and charge the same amount.
Look, the fact that you still get, you have to buy the preseason in order to be a season ticket holder.
That's market by market.
And you don't
though.
Have, no, not. I don't think so.
I'm confident that's market
I
by
would
market.
Look it up because I think the majority of the owners know if the season ticket holders had a choice, they wouldn't buy the preseason, but that's why they rope it in and say, because they want to make sure that there's butts and seats and money in their pockets, that in order to be a season ticket holder, you got to buy the preseason.
Someone texted me squares or toast. Does anybody do squares for preseason games?
No.
Unless you're just a degenerate. Which
Super
may be
Bowl
some,
and maybe conference championship
maybe.
Games?
I could see some degenerates playing some squares in preseason games, and maybe I'm learning something about some people, some things that I like. About some people. Our Twitch, Infuentes, saying Trey Mancini, not in Dusty's group chat. Dre saying Mauricio Dubon is in Dusty's group chat. And Bruce saying, I have a buddy who switched from Texans to Bengals because he became an LSU, quote, fan the year before and is now a Burrow, capital G guy. Huh. Yeah, I know a lot of people like that, too. 713-780-ESPN. Every Monday at 2. We have a mailbag Monday. Blank loves this segment.
No, I don't.
He loves it more than any other segment we do for the 5 days. For the
don't
for
put
the
words in my mouth
for the
random.
12 segments that we
you're
do each day
Wally
times
pipped.
Five. What are you talking about? We did this the other day, and you're like, guys, I love this segment.
No, I never
it's the
said
only
that.
Segment you've ever said that.
That's not true.
I think it is. Brendan, what do you think?
I love Who Said It.
Yeah, I was going to say, he really likes Who Said It, too.
You've never vocalized that about Who Said It, though.
I believe he just told you that I have.
I think in the early days of Who Said It, he liked it a lot.
Yeah.
He's got so used to winning that I think it maybe faded a little
bit. That's
true.
That's true.
All right, our Mailbag Monday. If you have questions for the Killer Bees, food, sports, dating advice, fantasy football advice, do you want three-quarter, whatever. Whatever your question is for the Killer Bees, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.